Going Linux, episode 95, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Whether you're new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
Currently, we create 3 episodes a month. We release listener feedback episodes at the beginning of each month and user experience episodes near the end.
Following the third Tuesday of each month, we post Larry's appearances on the live Computer America show.
In the user experience episodes, we take 2 months to cover a topic, first an introduction, then an in-depth look at the Linux operating system and its applications.
In today's episode, we have listener feedback. We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
Well, Tom, we have a few comments for our new Gone Linux segment, so let's start there.
All right, here's Jim's Gone Linux story. Hi, guys. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
I've listened to a variety of podcasts every day, and I must say that Going Linux is my favorite one of them all. I have tremendous respect for the professional way you gentlemen present yourselves during each and every show. The overall quality of your production is excellent. I say to you, bravo. Hey, all right. I've been using Linux for about a year and a half now, and I don't believe I'll ever go back. Let me tell you my story. I've been curious about Linux ever since I first heard something about it, probably 10 years ago. Back then I was on dial-up since broadband wasn't available in the area in which I lived. I knew it was something of an, at the time, obscure operating system, but I wasn't able to uncover much in the way of information about it. I bided my time. Around 3.5 years ago, I approached my then-future son-in-law with the request that he help me build a computer. He's an IT guy, and an exceptionally smart one at that. I wanted something non-proprietary, of moderate power, and with good expansion capabilities. I had finally moved to a place where I could get DSL. He made it happen for me, and I loved the darn thing. It was originally loaded with Vista Ultimate, and even though it was bloated and a little buggy, I had no major problems with it. But I started to think about Linux after a while. I decided it was time to check it out in earnest. I learned how to download and burn live CD ISOs. At the time, I hadn't heard about osdisk.com, that's OSDISK.com. I tried several distros, including Puppy, PC Linux OS, FreeSpire, and several others. I enjoyed playing with the live CDs, but I couldn't find a distro that all my hardware worked with. My main problem was my printer. I told myself that when I found a distro that all my hardware worked with out of the box, I would seriously consider changing over from Windows. There was a lapse of several months, as I became somewhat discouraged, but then I hit on Ubuntu 7.4 and son of a gun, everything worked. I got cold feet for a while, but the day came when I decided to go for it. I wiped my hard disk and did a clean install of Ubuntu 7.04 and have never looked back. I'm now up to 2 hard drives with Ubuntu 9.10 on one and Linux Mint 8 on the other. I know that Linux Mint is based on Ubuntu, but it's more than a dressed-up version. I can't decide which one I like better, but I haven't run across any other distros that I prefer to Ubuntu or Mint. What surprises me is how few people I talk to have even heard of Linux. I evangelize every chance I get to anyone who will listen. Someday, someone will be curious, just like I was, and then I'll show them what this homemade computer, completely non-proprietary, right down to the operating system, can do. May you all shine on. Jim. Jim, great, and I am really liking this idea of Gone Linux, the success stories to help people out so that they find out others have been in their place and gotten through it and loved it.
Our next Gone Linux email is from Bob. He starts his email with, "Why I've Gone Linux." Hi, Larry and Tom. Hi, Bob. I'm happy to send you my reasons for going Linux. I've been into computers since I got my Commodore 64 around 1983. Later, I bought my first Intel box, which was, of course, running DOS. From there, I went on to Windows 3.1, 95, 98, and XP. Always the tech geek, most people I know come to me for help when things go wrong. In the late 90s, I heard of Linux and looked into it. I wasn't certain about several installation issues, and when I asked a few questions on the website, I was told to RTFM, which for our newer listeners stands for Read the Friggin' Manual. My return reply was just as polite. Thus ended my first foray into Linux. Fast forward to 2004. The building my wife's business, Windows Box, was located in was destroyed in Hurricane Charley. During the cleanup, I salvaged the computer, but the monitor was toast. The computer is still running to this day. It had been built for her by the tech guy the real estate firm she worked for used. She couldn't remember if she'd been given the disks for XP, and we never found any in the rubble of the building. For the next 2 years, the computer was used at home and always passed Microsoft's inspections whenever I updated XP. Until, on the day the update failed, Microsoft said the OS was pirated, and every time I started the system, I had to stare at a screen telling me to call their tech line. Their tech people said my OS was pirated, and to fix it, I needed to buy a new XP. I told them the whole story, and also told them I would let them know who built the system. They said that that was great, and that I could buy XP for $129. I told them I could get it cheaper at the local store, and couldn't they do anything for me? All I wanted was a bit of a price break. It seemed reasonable to me, since I hadn't pirated the OS, I had called their tech support, and was willing to work with them to clear up the problem vis-a-vis who had built the machine. No dice, not even a $10 coupon was offered. I told them where Bill Gates could put his XP disks, and went and looked up Linux. I learned a lot had changed since 97 and 98. I listened to Chess Griffin's Linux Reality, began to read about Linux, and eventually put PC Linux OS on that computer. I now have 4 computers in my household, 2 desktops running Mint, my laptop runs Mandriva 2009, and my wife's laptop dual boots Mint and Vista. She only has Vista because she is taking online courses and the university only supports Microsoft and Apple. It really irks me to have Vista on that machine, and one of these days, I'll see if I can get it running the school's program via VM. And that's why I've gone Linux. By the way, love your show. Bob.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Great story. And here's a gone Linux story from listener Zonric. Zonric says, my Linux journey started years ago with Red Hat 6.0 back in 99. It was a fun learning experiment. Sadly, I moved back to Windows a few months later, as I'm big into gaming. I have run many different distributions over the years. Never really got back to it as my main OS until 09. Now I run an Ubuntu system and love it. Wish I could have stayed with Linux this whole time. The only time I use Windows now is out of a VirtualBox install of XP to play my Star Trek Online and BF2. Love the show, guys. Keep up the awesome work. Your friend and listener, Zonric. Thank you, Zonric. Very good. And there's no shame to running XP in a virtual box. Just keep it in that cage, okay?
Okay, and that wraps up our Gone Linux segment for this time. This month we've had a lot of response to a question Scott asked in our last listener feedback. Let's start with those. Scott wanted to know how to add a Mac-like dock to Linux, preferably without using CompIz desktop effects. The recommendations include Avant Window Manager, also known as AWN, SimDock, DockBarX, WBar, Cairo, Daisy, Mac for Lin, GLX-DOC, and Enlightenment E17. We'll have links in the show notes for each of these.
And thanks very much to the listeners who sent those links and helped us out with that. A lot of very, very good suggestions there. Thank you.
Now, on with our emails.
All right, next up, Road Surfer wrote, "Hi, guys."
Hello, Hi, Road Surfer. Road Surfer.
"I ran Avant Windows Manager, AWM, without CompViz inside VirtualBox before that started supporting 3D graphics, which works quite well. You might want to try it if you have a meaty enough graphics card. AWN needs a compositing manager. Luckily, Metacity, GNOME default window manager, can be told to act as a compositing manager. This is enough for AWN and I dare say other docs, but you will not get wobbly windows or anything. Simply open a terminal and enter the command gconf-editor, that's gconf-editor. I have set this as a menu item under Application System Tools. Drill down to /apps/metacity/general. On the right side is a series of options. One will be compositing_manager. Simply tick it. Job done. You can now quit the window. AWN will run and you can have all the icons jump up and down for you. NB. Larry, what's NB?
NB. Well, Tom, according to our online dictionary, NB stands for nota bene, which is, it sounds Italian, but it's Latin for note well. In the common vernacular, it's the equivalent of, in a paragraph, putting the word note followed by a colon.
Oh, okay. NB. When you do this, it will not be possible to start CompViz. You must stop Metacity acting as a compositing manager before trying to start CompViz. This can probably be done from the terminal or a script. I just haven't needed to check out how to do it. I just go via the graphic user interface as above. I gave up on AWN in the end, just didn't get on with it. Something else people might like to check out is DocBarks. That's DocBarx, all one word. It's a bit like Doc meets Kicker Bar kind of thing. Rather nice and similar to how Windows 7 does things. Or is Windows 7 similar to DocBarks? Smiley face. Ubuntu users can simply add the unsigned PPA and get going. There's bound to be a deb file and other installers floating around. I recently installed Ubuntu 9.10 on my girlfriend's laptop, a 640 MB compact Presario B1015, as XP had simply become bogged down, suffered thermal cutouts, and would blue screen if you tried to use the internet Wi-Fi. This was the first semi-custom install I've done. I manually set partitions for /home, swap, etc., and using the ext4 file system. And boy, what a difference. From cold start to being logged in and having a working session takes no more than 45 seconds. Staggeringly fast on such an old box. The system is responsive. CPU seems to sit around 43 degrees C, and even the blue screen causing internal Wi-Fi works without a hitch. Unfortunately, she works for a department at a university that does not support Linux. Windows and Apple only. They will let Linux users connect, but make it clear that they are very much on their own when it comes to support. Even so, I'm trying to convince her to try Ubuntu for a while rather than buying an Apple MacBook. Her current options on Windows are, how should I put this, forthright. But if she does buy a MacBook, I guess I inherit a decent enough laptop. 2 gigs of memory for it's only about 70 pounds, too. Currently, the only thing holding me back from going all Linux is Media Center. I only have the one PC at home and do not yet have the knowledge / courage to swap to Myth. Still too many questions about multi-head, multiple users, etc. It will be happening at some point, though. Cheers, Road Surfer. Road Surfer, a lot of good points there. Thank you for all of that feedback. And let's see if we can get the university to come around, too, because they're just they're holding you back, man.
Chuck had this suggestion. Hi, Larry and Tom. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, Chuck.
Just listened to episode 92, and a listener asked if there were any dock bars that run without CompIs. I think there are others as well. Have a wonderful life, Chuck, in Lawrenceville, Georgia. Well, thanks,
hey,
Chuck.
Hey, thanks, Chuck. Next up, an email from our old friend Klaatu, who runs the most excellent Bad Apples podcast, and you can find that over at www.thebadapples.info. And Klaatu writes, hey guys.
Hi, Klaatu.
Klaatu. I still love the show. In this past listener feedback episode, you had a listener ask about a Mac-style bar, in hip Mac terminology, it's a dock, down at the bottom of the screen. Since the listener mentions CompIs, I'm assuming it's a GNOME environment, and I think some of the best bets for this are WBAR. This is a super lightweight application launcher. This ships with Tiny Linux, which is like 10 megabytes for the entire distro, so I think pretty much every system should be able to run it. The Avant Window Manager is a dock that I think a little more heavy, but I seem to recall running in some pretty low-spec machines. A dock based on Cairo, haven't tried it. And last but not least, if the listener is actually running KDE, then there's a great dock that I've been using lately called Daisy. Then, of course, last but not least, there's a hack of just adding a new panel at the bottom of the screen. But rather than making it a taskbar or a place for a system tray and all of that other stuff, just drag your favorite apps from the GNOME or XFCE menu and create launchers down in that bar. Hope that helps. Keep up the great work. Klaatu. Thanks, Klaatu. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Klaatu. Next up, Stephen McLaughlin, the door-to-door geek, provided this. Hello, Larry. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Stephen. Great show. I say that you do not change a thing. You two are real great people talking about normal Linux things, and you educate everybody in the same way. Nobody knows everything. One quickie. Someone wrote in and they wanted the Mac OS X dock on a Crunchbang install with GNOME set as the default session and non-compised desktop. I would ask them to look at Enlightenment E17 desktop. With screenshots like this, I think they should find a happy place. And we'll include a link in the show notes to that screenshot, of course. P.S. With the functionality of GNOME Do, I will give up many preconceived desires on the desktop. GNOME Do just makes everything a very few clicks away. Thanks, Stephen McLaughlin, Door-to-Door Geek. And Stephen's website is www.doortodoorgeek.com. And that's DoorDoorGeek. Lots of double letters in that one.
All right, and next up, here's one from Zonrick. Hey, Larry and Tom.
Hi, Zonrick.
Zonrick. Zonrick here. I'm a little behind with the show, but I skipped ahead and played your show number 92. I'm not sure if Scott found the Mac-like dock he was looking for. SimDock is a good one. SimDock. It's for GNOME, but I think it will work with others and does not require CompIs. I use it on my old GX110, a sorry Intel 665 MHz, 128 of RAM using Ubuntu GNOME, lagging like a beast, but hey, it works for a file slave system. Zonrick. Thank you, Zonrick. That's another good suggestion.
JFL wrote, "Hi, Tom and Larry.
Hi, hello, JFL.
I got some comments for the last listener feedback about the Mac OS bar. There was a project called Mac for Lin. It tries to emulate the Aqua GUI. I think Cairo Doc would work without CompIz. He should also check that out. I hope my comments could help in some way." Well, thanks, JFL.
Yeah, thanks, ZFL. That is another great suggestion. Wow, we're getting a great response to this one. Our next email is from Steve. Steve wrote, "Hi, guys."
Hi, hey, Steve.
Just a quick reply to help one of your listeners from show 92 who wanted a more Mac-like interface. I'm no Mac expert, but others who are have told me that a distro called Dream Linux, which I used to have on one of my systems, came set up by default and not part of CompIz with a set of bold moving icons at the bottom of the screen, just like Mac. I'm slightly wary of recommending Dream Linux because, although I loved it, there have been some concerns about whether it is still being supported. These rumors have recently been denied, and if it is still to be updated, it is based on Ubuntu, and it was, is great. My best experience of Linux so far. There will be other neater ways of achieving this, no doubt, that are less distro-specific. Hope that helps, and keep up the great show. Steve. Oh, and Steve also adds, love the new Gone Linux section and hoping to hear some of the businesses who have Gone Linux and their migration tips. I'm hoping to retask an old PC to be a capable media center. I'd love to hear a show about how to set this up under Linux. Well, Steve, I'd love to hear that too. I have not set up a media center. I haven't done Mythbuntu. Is that it? No, Mythbuntu. I haven't done that yet.
Daniel added this recommendation. Hi, Larry and Tom, / Tom and Larry.
Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel. After listening to the last listener feedback episode, I have some suggestions for listener Scott. He appears about 14 minutes and 20 seconds. He was searching for docking applications in Linux, that is, the Mac OS X style bar at the bottom of the screen. There are actually a few, but given that he only has 256 megabytes of RAM, things get complicated, but nevertheless doable. I'll mention the most popular ones just in case of help for other listeners. The one I like more is AWN, Avant Window Navigator. It's really nice and very configurable with personal launchers, plugins, and the like. It has lots of effects, jumping icons, flashing lights, and themes. It doesn't take much in the way of resources, but 256 megabytes is probably not enough, since it needs compositing. Compositing seems to be popular because of CompIz, but GNOME and XFCE can do compositing on their own. Another one I like is Cairo Doc. Cairo-Doc. It's quite similar to AWN and may be a bit less resource-intensive, but still needs compositing. Again, GNOME or XFCE will do, which means more CPU and RAM. The only thing I don't like is the options. It has so many that I get lost, but if you like tweaking every single detail and want to learn how it works, then it's probably the best. The other popular one is Docky, which itself is not a dock, but a front end for GNOME Do, a launcher. I really don't like it. It takes more resources than any of the others, and at least in my laptop never worked, probably because some problems with my NVIDIA card. Plus, it needs Mono. If you already have apps that work with Mono, then no problem. Otherwise, it'll take even more resources loading all the Mono libraries. So up to now, I wouldn't recommend any of these for Scott, but he's free to try. The one I would recommend is WBAR. It's very, very light. It doesn't need compositing, so it works in GNOME, XFCE, LXDE, OpenBox, which was the original window manager Scott might have had in CrunchBang before switching to GNOME, and most of the others. Of course, it offers a lot less in the way of bells and whistles, but it still looks great and would work in his computer without problems. My recommendation would be to go back to OpenBox or install XFCE and try WBAR, or if he doesn't like it, try AWN, risking a slowdown in the machine. I hope it helps, and I hope you're not mad at me for all the Linux is safer than Windows mail that you took to the Computer America show. Cheers, Daniel. Hey, thanks, Daniel. And hey, thanks for giving me some content to share with the Computer America guys. I appreciate it.
Great feedback, Daniel. Thank you. Boy, we are getting a lot of feedback on this one. Okay, next up, Matt's suggestion. Hi, guys.
Hi, I'm Matt.
Really enjoying the podcast. Just finished number 92. Wanted to offer up the option of running CairoDoc without OpenGL. I'm running it on my NetTop server without OpenGL on a GMA950. It should run as long as GNOME runs. It won't get effects, but it does give you an OS X-like dock. There's even an OS X theme, but I'm not sure it works without OpenGL. The OpenGL version is in the Software Center. I'm fairly sure it is in Synaptic, but you can get it at the official website. Once installed, it opens up in the Accessories menu as Cairo-Doc, and then in parentheses, no OpenGL. If you want it to run on boot, you can add the entry under System, Startup, Applications. Click on Add, give it a name, and enter the command CairoDocC, which is CairoDoc -C. Hope that helps. Matt. Okay, well, there's another one. Thanks, Matt.
Terry wrote this. Hi, Larry and Tom.
Hi, Terry.
This email is concerning episode 92, when Scott asked if there's an Apple-like dock that does not require using CompIS. I'm writing this email to provide some info for your audience. I don't know how useful it will be or if it's worthy to be read on the show, but here it is anyway. There are quite a few applications for Linux that imitate the Apple's dock. And Terry provides us with a link to an internetling.com post that talks about 5 macOS docs for Ubuntu and other Linux distros. He continues, the one that I use is called CairoDoc. CairoDoc works best with CompIS turned on. If CompIS is off, its transparent background would become opaque and not look very nice. However, even if you don't have CompIS installed or your video card can't run CompIS, there is an alternative solution. If you are using the GNOME desktop, turn on the Metacity feature called Compositing Manager, otherwise known as GNOME Compositing. This GNOME Compositing feature will give your desktop a little graphical enhancement. It even works within VirtualBox, and CairoDoc will display correctly with it. And he provides us with a link to instructions for turning on the GNOME compositing. Unfortunately, turning on GNOME compositing incurs a slight penalty to graphical performance, so I don't think it will help Scott too much in this case if he's already on a slow computer. I suggest people who want to run Linux on slower computers might want to consider using a lightweight desktop environment such as XFCE or LXDE. The distribution Zubuntu, for example, uses XFCE. Also, I want to make a recommendation for Windows users. Many first-time Linux users are generally people who used Windows. I think having a Linux desktop layout looking similar to the Windows desktop might ease the process of switching over and make the experience less painful. People who want their GNOME desktop to look similar to Windows should check out a theme called Win2-7. That's W-I-N, the number 2, and then a dash, and then the number 7. Available at gnomelook.org, and that's gnome-look.org. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes. This theme package looks very nice and is very easy to install. Just run the install script and it will do the installing works for you. The script will also create a backup script that will uninstall the theme and return your desktop to its prior state. Okay, this theme package does reuse some Microsoft graphics, so it's up to Larry if he wants to include this recommendation. Of course we will. But so far, Microsoft hasn't sued anyone that makes Windows themes yet. P.S. I would like to hear you guys discuss about the issues with Mono and Miguel de Acasa sometime in the future. It's a pretty big debate among the Linux community right now, so I don't think you guys could ignore it either. Personally, I think Mono is a Trojan horse that Microsoft gifted to the Linux community. I don't think Ubuntu is wise to include Mono packages in the distribution. Yes, I know I contradicted myself when I recommended the Windows theme. Terry in Ohio. Thanks, Terry.
Thanks, Terry. Excellent email.
And that's it for the responses to Scott's question. Now, on to the rest of our email.
All right, next we have an email from Ohio. He wrote regarding the Sawtooth Mac question from Paul. He says, in reference to Paul with the Acer Aspire 1 netbook, he has tried the Ubuntu netbook remix. I hear that it was designed to work best on a netbook. I don't have a netbook, so I never tried it. Also for the caller with the G4 Power PC, I believe that Fedora is still providing a current release designed for the Power PC. Just a hint. Thanks for all you do. Ohio. Thanks, Ohio.
Our next email is from Dejan.
Hi Dejan. Dejan.
Hello, my name is Dejan Petrovic, and I'm from Serbia, formerly Yugoslavia Republic. I've been using Linux for about a year, but I was building up courage for that for about 10 years. And I'm glad that I made the switch from Windows to Linux and not returning to the old system. Down here, something like that is a big deal because oftentimes nobody you know uses Linux, so you don't have your system guru and you're alone in that world. Some forums help, but more often you have to deal with the problems on your own. I found your podcast and now I've been listening for 2 shows a day to catch up. You're doing great things for us newbies. Down here, it's rare to find someone who uses a legal copy of Windows. Only companies and shops. The rest of us are finding different solutions. In parentheses, piracy. That's why Linux is great. But most of the people haven't heard about it, or they've seen some old release from the earlier Linux distributions. I'm trying to show them how it looks now. And of course, iCandy helps. That's CompisFX. Back in the Windows days, I was doing programming and have developed some commercial applications. My goal is to learn more in that area with Qt4, etc. I've tried many distributions and now I'm on Kubuntu 9.10 on my desktop machine, waiting for the no-bug KDE 4.4 release and Ubuntu with GNOME 3.0. On my wife's laptop, I have the same Kubuntu release, and I'm glad that she's spending more time on a computer now than she was when we were using Windows, about 3 hours a day. Maybe that has something to do with her little project of rearranging and cataloging our 30,000 family pictures, I don't know. Question, because Linux is most powerful when it's on the internet, packages, updates, installs, etc., what should someone do if they don't have a good internet connection, or none at all? Mainly, I'm asking for some of my friends who would like to use Linux, but if they have to install codecs or more, they can't. How do I deal with it? Well, for this problem, I have found 4 solutions. Number 1, elegant solution. I know that Linux Mint comes with some codecs. But is it enough? And if somebody decided to use that distro, how can they do that with a very slow transfer connection like dial-up? I'm not sure how this can be solved. Number 2, not so elegant solution. I can make a USB startup drive with all the codecs and install from that. Number 3, geeky. Do apt on CD tricks. Number 4, geeky. Do remaster sys tricks. Will this do the trick? I didn't want to do something yet because you know, friends, they can be disappointed if something goes wrong. Thank you for your effort and help on this. Continue to do what you do. P.S. If I can do something to support your website, translation of some articles to Serbian language or something else, feel free to contact me, Dejan. Well, thanks, Dejan. Hope we're pronouncing your name correctly. And, all right, for those solutions, I like all of them. As far as the slow dial-up, I don't really see any way around that if you're going to try to download a distribution. One thing you could use is the BitTorrent. That can help speed things up a little bit, even on a slow connection, although it's still going to be slow. That might help a little bit. The best bet is, if you can afford it, send away for one of the CDs from Canonical or somewhere else. They may be able to ship one out. There are plenty of places you can purchase them online for something like $5 a CD. Those I haven't tried myself, so I don't know how reputable those particular offers are, but I have seen them on some fairly reputable sites, so I can imagine that they would be very good. And paying for the service to burn a CD for you, package it up, and mail it out, I'm sure that they're going to charge you postage as well. And if they're sending it from the U.S., that might be very costly too. But it might be the only solution for somebody with a slow dial-up connection. Or maybe you just find somebody who has a faster connection and have them download your CDs and burn them for you. Anyway, those are just some suggestions on my part, and hope that helps. And again, thanks, Dejan, for your email.
And our next email is from JFL, who says, "Hi, Tom and Larry."
Hi,
hello,
JFL.
I've got some comments for the last listener feedback about Linux being a text-based operating system with a GUI pasted on top. That could be the easy way to look at it. I see Linux more as a modular operating system. The GUI is a module that operates with the help of the shell. If you look at how the daemons work, they work as modules that are loaded and unloaded to the normal operation of the system. Anyway, macOS is the same, and even Windows was just that until Microsoft completely embraced the NT technology on the Windows operating systems. And about the /drive Linux install. I guess the listener thought of Linux as an application and tried to install it as such, using the drive D and preserving the Windows install. When Linux installed, formatted the drive as ext3 or ext4, and then Windows can't see the D drive because it no longer exists. If that's what he did, he lost all of his old files in the D drive. Hope my comments would help in some way. Thanks, JFL. Good points. I, too, think of Linux as being a sort of a modular system, and the modules are easy to understand and put together so that an entry-level programmer or even somebody writing bash scripts can grab those modules, string them together, and get the jobs done that they want to do.
And another email from Klaatu. Tom, Larry, or Larry, Tom. Hi, Klaatu. Sorry, I'm just listening to the last listener feedback and can't stop talking to you guys. Feel free to forward this email to the listener if you think that there's any useful information here. So actually, I had a Graphite Sawtooth G4 for years and installed some Linux I onto it with no problem. One, the Sawtooth G4 most likely does not have a DVD drive, so you must burn your live CD to CDR, not DVD-R. Two, possibly the optical drive in the G4 is old and might have trouble reading media. If you have an external CD or DVD drive using USB, then it might be worth trying to boot off of that instead of the internal drive. Three, press C, not option, while booting. C stands for CD drive, and will force the G4 to attempt to boot from the CD rather than from scanning the system first. Not a major difference, but it might be something significant to try. 4. Sawtooth G4 is around 400 MHz chip, so this is a low-spec machine. It's shipped with not much RAM, so it may still have only a very little bit of RAM. Keep this in mind when choosing your distro. 5. What distro to use? Fedora and Debian PPC versions are worth looking at for this G4, but you must remember the recommended specs of what you're trying to install. Yes, Linux runs on old hardware, but that doesn't mean KDE 4 or GNOME 2.28 runs all that well. If you're trying to cram a heavy combination of software components onto a 400 MHz chip and 128 MB of RAM, then you may not have much success. Fedora circa releases 6 or 7. Fedora 6, I know, required a G3 or better, and 256 MB of RAM for a GUI and 128 MB for text only. Debian circa Etch, I have installed on G3 computers with 128 MB of RAM, but 256 feels a lot better. Remember that the Sawtooth model was released around 2000, so you really are dealing with old specs. My advice is to install Debian. I'd even try the latest release, Lenny, but do not install X. Then, after you've finished the install, go back and install X on some lightweight desktop like XFCE, and I think you'll be pleased with the performance. 6. Lastly, two links. Here's a link to a video on how to install Xubuntu on old machines, including doing it without X. This doesn't exactly apply since Ubuntu doesn't have a PowerPC version anymore. But the Ubuntu alternate installs a lot like Debian's normal install, so watch this video just to get a feel for how it's supposed to be done. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes. This place, another link that will be in the show notes, sells G4 processor upgrades. I modded my Sawtooth up to 800 MHz and a few gig of RAM, and the thing ran great. I'd still have it to this day if I could fit it in my backpack when I moved east. Good luck, and let me know if you have any questions, Klaatu. Thanks, Klaatu. We can always depend on you to have the answers related to how to get Linux installed on an old Mac computer. And last but not least, Mikolai provides this definition. Hello, Tom and Larry.
Hi
Mikolai. You mentioned demicrosofting in your last listener feedback episode. There is another cool synonym to that phrase, to defenestrate. And you'll find that on Wiktionary, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes, of course. Defenestrate, definition 3, computing, humorous, slang, to stop using the Windows operating system. Keep up the great work. Greetings from Poland, Mikolai. Thanks, Mikolai. In our next episode, Computer America number 24. Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, and illustrations. You can also send us an audio comment by email. We'll play it on the show. Our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com. You can also get future episodes delivered directly to your computer, automatically, and as soon as new episodes are available. For instructions on how to subscribe to a podcast, go to subscribe.goinglinux.com, and of course, subscribing is free. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.